When I was young, I was diagnosed with dyslexia. And for those of you who don't know what that means, basically, words were not my friends. I had trouble reading them, spelling them, and my handwriting was once described as ancient hieroglyphs. But by using a thesaurus, I could find words that meant the same thing, but were easier for me to spell. This greatly improved my English skills. Unfortunately, some words I knew how to spell, but was missing their meaning. This became quite noticeable when, on being told that I had a large vocabulary, I responded with, "Yes, and I know a lot of words too." This led me to have an appreciation for words and their meanings. And in recent years, an annoyance when people use the wrong word to describe something. Today, I would like to explore the meaning of a word that is being used a lot in the news, and quite frequently, wrongly. That word is unprecedented, which is defined as having never happened before. So let's start by having a look at some of the news articles that have been published recently, and then we'll look at two truly unprecedented times that have been recorded for us in the Bible. So first we have an article that was published on the 12th of March, which reads, "Moscow's immense military mobilization is clearly not aimed just at Ukraine. Unless Vladimir Putin accepts a ceasefire with meaningful security guarantees, there will be no end in sight to the war. If anything, we could see an extension of Russian aggression beyond Ukraine. This bleak reality is that Europe still faces an unprecedented threat." However, even a cursory examination of history will show that Russia has a long and bloody history of invading and fighting with European countries. In just the last 1,000 years, they have attacked or fought Poland, Sweden, Denmark, Great Britain, France, Spain, Portugal, Crimea, and Italy, just to name a few. There are more, but they're really hard to pronounce. The second article, also published on the 12th, reads, "In an escalation of his America First agenda, US President Donald Trump has sparked jitters by imposing hefty tariffs on steel and aluminium imports, igniting fears of an all-out global trade war. This unprecedented move of ramping up duties on products entering America ends all exemptions to levies." What they fail to mention is that just before the trade agreement in 1934, the average tariff rate for imports was just under 60%. And before that, in 1828, at the signing of the Tariff of Abominations, the rate was over 62%. And thirdly, on day one, with the dust barely settled on the Oval Office, Trump signed an unprecedented 26 executive orders and reversed 78 of his predecessor's Joe Biden's actions. Although the number sounds big, it's important to remember that in his first 100 days, Mr. Biden signed more than 60 executive orders, 24 of which were direct reversals of Mr. Trump's previous policies. Barack Obama signed 277 between 2009 and 2017. But that's not even a drop in the bucket compared to Franklin D. Roosevelt, who signed 2,023 executive orders in just 8 years. As we can see, newspapers use the term unprecedented to simply mean this is bad, or this is big news, or please buy my newspaper. It doesn't mean never happened before, but merely this hasn't happened in your attention span of maybe a few months. Now let's look at a couple of events recorded in the Bible that were truly unprecedented. First, let's look at the time when God removed the vast majority of mankind off the face of the earth, in an event that was truly unprecedented. So much so that God promises that he'll never do it again. That was, of course, the Great Flood. You all know the story. Mankind had disobeyed God so much to an extent that if he didn't intervene, they would have completely destroyed themselves. And the whole human story would have ended about 4,000 years too soon. God found one person in the entire earth who was still perfect in his generations, Noah, and commanded him to build an ark and take one pair of each unclean animal and seven pairs of all clean animals. Building the ark took 120 years. So it wasn't a short-term project. God then closed and sealed the door to the ark with Noah, his family, and all the animals inside. 1 week later, the flood came. And for a total of 1 year and 17 days, Noah and his family were in the ark. And if we turn over to Genesis chapter 9 and starting in verse 8, we'll see God's covenant with Noah, promising to never flood the earth again. So that's Genesis 9, and we'll start reading in verse 8. And God spoke unto Noah, to his sons, with him, saying, And I, behold, I establish my covenant with you, and with your seed after you. And dropping down to verse 13, I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be a token of the covenant between me and the earth. And it shall come to pass, when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the bow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant with which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And the waters shall no more become a flood to destroy all flesh. Totally unprecedented and mercifully unique. The other unprecedented event that I wish to look at is very pertinent to this particular feast. The entrance of Israel into the Promised Land, and the fall of Jericho. Again, we know the story. The Israelites had journeyed down into Egypt in the days of Joseph and had been given the land of Goshen to live in. Things went well for many years until there arose a Pharaoh who did not know Joseph. He oppressed the Israelites and enslaved them. Then, through 10 plagues that systematically trashed all the Egyptian gods, the Eternal freed his people and, through the miraculous parting of the Red Sea, led them out of Egypt towards the promised land of Canaan. When the Israelites reached the promised land, they sent in spies to reconnoitre the land. On their return, all but 2 of the spies lacked the faith in God to bring them into the land, and so they gave an evil report of the land. Israel rebelled against God, so he barred that generation from entering the promised land and sent them off to wander and die in the wilderness for 40 years. At the end of the 40 years, God brought the children of the rebellious generation back to Canaan, and under Joshua's command, led them across the Jordan River and into the Promised Land. And we'll pick up the story in Joshua 5, and starting in verse 10. So that's Joshua 5, and we'll start in verse 10. And the children of Israel encamped in Gilgal, and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month, at even in the plains of Jericho. And they did eat the old corn of the land on the morrow after the Passover, unleavened cakes and parched corn in the selfsame day. And the manna ceased on the morrow after they had eaten the old corn of the land. Neither had the children of Israel manna any more, but they did eat of the fruit of the land of Canaan that year. And it came to pass, when Joshua was by Jericho, that he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there stood a man over against him with a sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went up to him and said unto him, Art thou for us, or for our adversaries? And he said, Nay, as the captain of the hosts of the Lord am I now come. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth, and did worship, and said unto him, What saith my Lord unto his servant? And the captain of the Lord's host said unto Joshua, Loose thy shoe off thy foot, for the place wherein you standeth is holy. And Joshua did so. And carrying on in Joshua 6, Now Jericho was straitly shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out, and none came in. And the Lord said unto Joshua, See, I have given into thy hand Jericho, and the king thereof, and the mighty men of valour. And ye shall compass the city, all ye men of war, and go around about the city once. Thus shalt thou do 6 days. And seven priests shall bear before the ark 7 trumpets of ram's horn. And the 7th day you shall compass the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow with the trumpets. And it shall come to pass that when ye make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when ye hear the sound of the trumpets, all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city shall fall down flat, and the people shall ascend up every man straight before him. And then just dropping down to verse 15. And it came to pass on the seventh day that they rose early about the dawning of the day and compassed the city after the same manner seven times. Only on that day they compassed the city seven times. And it came to pass on the seventh time, when the priests blew with the trumpets, Joshua said unto the people, Shout, for the Lord hath given you the city. And finally, in verse 20, So the people shouted when the priests blew with the trumpets, and it came to pass, when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, that the people shouted with a great shout, that the wall fell down flat, so that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. Jericho's walls fell down flat, outwards, just as God has said, all except for the section of the wall that contains Rahab's house. She had put her trust in the God of Israel, and she was protected, and later became part of the genealogy of Christ. This was a miraculous event. When buildings and cities fall, they usually implode, and the walls fall inward onto whoever or whatever is inside them. Here, the walls fell outwards, adding further proof that God gave Israel the city. It didn't come to them through any great power of their own. Again, totally unprecedented. We are looking forward to entering our promised land, the kingdom of God, a time when this Satan-inspired civilization will be completely and totally eradicated, just as the pre-flood civilization had to be. There will be one government that will rule the entire earth forever. There will be no warmongering, no financial competition, and no need to worry that the next administration will automatically undo all the good that you've achieved. Just as the Israelites had to have faith in God and obey him to the letter in order to enter Canaan, and just as Noah had to exhibit faith and obedience in building and entering the ark, so must we have faith in the same God to prepare us to become spirit-born sons of God in his kingdom, which for us will be truly unprecedented.